You watched a bit of theatre today, didn't you?
Oh, I am piping hot. I have to confess, I was in a cinema and I watched a recorded screening of a theatrical performance of Macbeth. I didn't watch it live, but boy, do I wish I did.
If you're in a cinema, you're allowed. This is you're allowed to talk about this.
Thank you. Otherwise, you wouldn't allow me to, would you? This is the rule. This is how I've got around it.
Well, I would have cut you off and I would have gone, yeah, anyway, moving on swiftly. How long's the play?
Play was, including the interval, the play was just over 2.5 hours. But I could eat that shit up all day, man. I love Macbeth. It's my favourite of the Shakespeares. Do you have a favourite of the Shakespeares?
Yeah, I mean, we did Macbeth for GCSE, so for that reason, it would be my favourite because I know it the best. And
it lodges.
Yeah, there's some good film versions of it. I haven't seen it as a grown-up in the flesh.
Yeah.
I've stopped you from us doing the Fassbender Macbeth film on this. That felt dead to me, as nice as it looked.
I'm not sure we could spend an hour talking about this one I went to see. Even though it's starring Ralph Fiennes as Macbeth.
I mean, that's who you want.
And in the role of Lady Macbeth was Indira Varma. You know, from Game of Thrones, she plays Oberon's lover from Dawn.
Yeah, I know her for her other work.
Well, she's terrific in this. Ralph Fiennes is very good as an actor. It's watching him is like watching an actor with just so much confidence. You know, I think the temptation in Shakespeare, particularly in the dramas, is to do a lot of shouting and to really kind of spit on the audience and to be big and huge. And he plays everything so understated that almost to the extent where sometimes I'm not even sure if it is good or not. But it's just confident. It's just, and it's funny as well. And it's like, he's just fucking amazing, man. And it reminded me anyway of my favorite line in all of Shakespeare. It's kind of, you know, this is like a choice bit from one of the monologues. It's when Macbeth has found out that Lady Macbeth has thrown herself off the battlements, and he reacts, he kind of shrugs it off almost, but he reacts, and one of the things he says is that life is a tale told by an idiot, and it makes me greatly happy and joyous to know that people 600 years ago thought exactly the same thing that I do.
It's interesting with old Ralphie Fiennes. He hasn't really been in a good film for a long time, or really been sort of the main guy.
Yeah.
You go back to Coriolanus in 2011, and he's kind of front and centre. But, you know, he's knocking around the Bonds. He's knocking around the Potters. Sure, he's great fun in A Bigger Splash.
Oh, he's great in that.
You know, he's in The King's Man. He's in The Menu, which I really didn't like. It just feels like he should be in. He's not in that much stuff.
He was in The White Crow. I loved that film, the ballet film.
He's not in it much, is he? Or is he?
Not loads. He's a very, very, you know, emphasis on the supporting character.
Right. So yeah, he's directing that. That's fine.
Yeah.
He's always adding in as the seasoning.
Well, I mean, it's funny you say seasoning because he's brilliant in Hail Caesar, but he is seasoning in that as well.
You know, you've got to go back to films like, you know, 2005, The Constant Gardener, where he is the star.
Yeah.
Or he's like the baddie in Red Dragon. 2002. Huh?
Grand Budapest Hotel.
There you go. Okay, I'll give
you
that.
That's the one. That's the one.
Defo. But, that's few and far between.
Well, maybe he's done with that shit. You know, you were saying this last week about Matt Damon, is that they pick...
You say done with that shit, but when it's not enough. I don't think he's obviously great. Why is he not? I guess because he gets to pick and choose.
Like, I mean, just so much theatre as well. Maybe he just doesn't. Maybe that really is unironically his real love. It's possible.
Oh, theatre for me, dear. Theatre, it's always the first love. You know, I go and I bang the sex worker, mistress of cinema, but of course, always deep in my heart is always the boards. It's the boards I adore.
It's the sex cinema. Worker pays
She's such
the
a
bill.
Slut. She's such a horrible little slut, and I'll give it to her. Sure, I'll give it to her when she wants it. But no, of course, my heart, my love and my heart and my soul belong to the mother, mother that is theatre.
Yeah. I mean, yet more seasoning, but he's fantastic in Schindler's List as well, of course.
We see, of course he is. You know,
of course he is.
He's a bit more seasoning than that. But like in the 90s, that's when he's
more paprika. He's less salt.
No. He's in more. I wish I hadn't introduced seasoning as a thing. I mean, he's in films longer.
Yeah.
So he's in Quiz Show leading it. He's in Strange Days, an English Patient.
Yeah.
You know, he's more of the end of the affair.
Sure.
Okay. And then just, I guess once we hit the 2000s, he starts to go, oh yeah, fuck it. I'll be the butler in Made in Manhattan. I don't care. Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place.
And
joining me, as ever, it's the old leaky boy bucket brain, Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello there.
We already know how you are because you've just been talking for 20 minutes about Macbeth.
Or that got cut. Because it was so riveting.
On today's episode, we are doing the 2013 zombie flick World War Z, directed by Mark Forster. Of course it stars Bradley Pitts.
Oh, Mr. Pitts. Big Brad.
It is 116 mins. Now, usually you'd hear me kind of go, ooh, that's a little bit long for this kind of film.
Sure.
Do you know what? I didn't feel it.
Oh, I didn't feel it either.
I didn't feel it.
No.
This goes down smooth. Here is the letterboxed. This is baffling. The thing in caps. Remember Philly? That's it.
What? That's it?
As in, like, I remember Philadelphia?
Sure. I mean, they're in Philadelphia for a very small period of the film.
Let's gloss over that. I might just gloss over that.
Yeah, gloss over that.
Life for former United Nations investigator Jerry Lane and
Jerry
his family.
Jerry Lane is in my ears and in my bar. Yeah? Yeah? Make you think of that? Does it make you think of that? Jerry Lane? Yeah? Yeah?
No. No, it just made me think only towards the end of the film when he spells his name out. He spelled it with a G and I thought,
big time. Yeah.
What? Not with a J?
Man, only Americans spell it with a J. Jerry, it just comes from Gerald, right?
Yeah, right. So he's American.
Yeah, I know, but he's not really, is he?
Oh, and sorry, I've not forgotten. I know this, but it's nowhere in the letterbox. It's based on the book by Max Brooks of the same name. It's not called Max Brooks. It's called World War Z.
You did it the wrong way around again.
How does it work?
You say it's based on the book of the same name by Max Brooks. It's not called by Max Brooks. It's called World War Z.
Based on the book of the same name. By Max Brooks.
Why can't you do this? You did it so well for 10 episodes.
I know, and then I overthink. So what's the joke? I made the joke. Based on the book of the same name.
By Max Brooks.
That's what
I
just
said. It's not called Max Brooks. It's called World War Z.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. I did say that. And then,
No, you didn't. You said based on the book by Max Brooks of the same name.
Oh,
that's what
okay,
you said.
Right. That's yeah. Right. Of course, it's based on a book. Based on a book of the same name by Max Brooks.
Yeah.
It's not called by Max Brooks. It's
Really?
It's called World War Z.
Are you going to cut out you trying to do that joke six times before?
Let's find out.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate the fact that I can't tell that joke anymore.
I mean, you've lost all confidence when it comes to that joke. It's been routed from you.
I just think I'm going to have to say goodbye to it.
All it took was 1 week. I kind of just forgot that you'd been doing it. And you were trying to do it. And I was like, what are you doing? And you were like, have you forgotten? This is my big joke. And I'd forgotten that week. I wasn't paying attention. And since then, you've not been able to do it. It seems like you're really relying on the kind of external affirmation that joke is funny.
That isn't actually what's happened. This story, and this is the full stop to the story,
okay,
is that in life, sometimes you like strike upon something that makes you really happy, and it's almost out of it's subconscious, and it's like, oh, it's perfect. And then you can keep doing it as long as you don't think about it. And as soon as you look at yourself and you see yourself and you think, oh, I'm really enjoying that. I think that's really good.
Yeah.
It all goes wrong and you fuck yourself up and you try to do it and then everything is ruined. Yeah. And that is my life. It's like, you know, when you catch yourself breathing and then you can't breathe anymore.
Oh,
and then you collapse.
Fuck's sake. Now you've said that. Now I have to think about breathing. And everyone listening is thinking about breathing. Damn it. That's banned now. We're banning that.
No more talking about breathing.
No more talking about breathing.
To the letterboxed again.
Remember Philly?
Life for former United Nations investigator Gerald Lane and his family seems content. Suddenly, the world is plagued by a mysterious infection, turning whole human populations into rampaging, mindless zombies. After barely escaping the chaos, Lane is persuaded to go on a mission to investigate the disease. What follows is a perilous trek around the world where Lane must brave horrific dangers and long odds to find answers before human civilization falls.
Yeah.
Which is broadly what the film is about.
That last bit was pretty good, yeah.
The book by Max Brooks is more of a, my understanding is it's almost kind of a series of excerpts and interviews, and it's almost like a research document in itself.
Oh, cool.
That's why the book, people like really latched onto it. It was a different way to tell the zombie story. Like imagine if the zombie plague broke out and someone was trying to observe it and figure it out and, you know, on the ground, reportage, you know, all kind of cut together. But and by all accounts, from the Reddit chat, people who love the book do not like the film.
I had heard that it was different. I didn't realize it was so different.
It's got the spine of the basic idea of, oh, zombie outbreak, but like with someone trying to figure it out and piece it together.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a wisp of a whiff of a guff.
Sure.
You kind of wonder why they've probably bought the rights just to cover themselves and go, we just want to do whatever we want.
Oh, Bradley Pitt. Yes, please.
I really enjoyed watching this and it made me remember. I was a bit hesitant to let this through, the Forgot You Forgots, but I kind of had broadly forgotten everything in this.
Yeah.
But it's very well put together. It's entertaining. It's a series of big, effective set pieces and it barrels along and I think today it occurred to me why it's probably forgettable is because none of the set piece, it's not really tied together in any kind of meaningful way to leave you with any kind of emotion. But when you're watching it, it's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, what else? What else do you want if you're just going to bang on a movie? Yeah?
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed watching it too. I will say this is maybe my fourth watch. Possibly fifth. I forget almost everything every time. The bit I remember is always the bit with Peter Capaldi towards the end in the WHO research facility in Cardiff in Wales. That's the bit I remember. And that, to be honest, that's the more typical zombie film genre bit where a small group of people are going through. Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things that I find interesting about this film is that zombie movies largely, and it might really just be related to scope and budget and all of it, all the rest of it, are pretty claustrophobic generally and small. And this film has a lot of sprawl and scope. I mean, it takes place in several different countries, these huge, big locations. So I think the reason I remember the last bit is because it's got Peter Capaldi and also it's the bit that I more associate with zombie-type films, crawling through tight corridors, trying to be quiet, trying to navigate a simple problem, as opposed to the section of the film which takes place in Jerusalem, for example, where there are enormous hordes of zombies and huge numbers of people. That feels quite different for most of the zombie films that I've seen. And I forget that bit every time.
Do you want to know the story about the bit in Wales with Peter Capaldi?
Yeah.
The whole ending, that whole third act ending, was completely reshot and added because Brad Pitt looked at the initial cut
and he wasn't happy. The film originally ended with a big battle in Russia.
Really?
His character, Gerald Lane.
Yeah.
Jerry Lane is supposed to end up going to Russia, and months pass. And I think the way he figures out how to beat the zombies is that the cold weather, that it doesn't agree with them.
Right.
And it was, you know, lots of action, but quite dreary and dark. His wife, he has, you know, has lost all contact with his wife, and she's going through it. And he just was like, this is not for me, guys. We really need to spend a load more money, and we need to sort this out. And they got on Damon Lindelof of Lost fame and
yeah.
another scriptwriter, and they all came up with this new third act set in Wales in this tiny little WHO facility.
Mm-hmm.
Kept it small, and it's such a smart choice.
Yeah.
You know, you've had this film that's big, and then you go really, really small. You focus in on a really claustrophobic situation.
Yeah.
And you make the stakes matter because you care about Jerry Lane.
Yeah. It's the right thing. It's also the smart thing. It's the thing that sets this film apart from other stories.
Yeah, I mean, I could think there is so much that's quite derivative about the film. Like the post-rock, there's post-rock soundtrack in mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
And then if you go back to 28 Days Later, the zombie flick that kick-started the fast zombie craze.
Right.
That film is slathered in Godspeed You Black Emperor, tip-top post-rock band.
Yes.
And then you've got this film, 10 years later, basically playing the same soundtrack card, but then it makes World War Z makes all these interesting, surprising choices. What Hollywood movie is going to set a key bit in Jerusalem? You know,
yeah,
it's a left turn,
isn't it?
It's a left turn,
yeah.
And it's
also because you've just found out that you're going to Korea, so you're getting yourself ready for some fun in Korea, and then they never leave the army base and get back on the plane ASAP.
To say this is globe-trotting is
sure.
pushing it a bit. It's
a
more
bit.
Like army yeah. base.
Yeah.
Basically, the only globe-trotty bit is Jerusalem.
When they're in Korea, though, can I just say my favourite little line within the film, and I, you know, again, I haven't read the book either, so I don't know if this comes from the book, but there's a little detail. Brad Pitt's there. He's chatting to a CIA guy who's been arrested and has been held captive in a cell. He's an actor that I recognise, but I don't have the IMDb page open.
David Morse. Hey, do you want to tell people why you don't have the IMDb up?
Well, I don't have the IMDb page open today, Adam, because we decided for some reason that I would play the box office game today. And so I am not opening it in order to not accidentally see anything. I'm a little scared about that, to be honest.
Because you've been so busy, I said, why don't I do the box office and
sure.
you play the game? And
yeah.
it's going to be like a present, because now you're going to get to feel what I feel.
Right, it's a present that I can unwrap, and then I can open the box, and inside the box is one of those ticking bombs from the Hurt Locker. And then when I've opened the box, it's suddenly strapped to me and I can't get it off, and Jeremy Renner's touching my head, and then I die, right?
Exactly. And
yeah.
David Morse is also in the Hurt Locker.
He's in every film, that's why, because David Morse is like has been in 700 films. But in this scene, David Morse plays a captive CIA officer who's been arrested by the Americans because he was caught selling weapons to North Koreans, right? And but Brad Pitt realizes that he knows something, you know. So he's asking him, he sits down and he says, you know, what are you doing here? What do you know? They have a chat for a bit and he says, are the North Koreans, are they surviving this? And David Morse's character says something along the lines of, you know, in one of the great historical mobilizations of humanity in history, the North Koreans have decided that the best way to survive this is to pull out every single citizen's teeth so that they can't bite anyone and no one can transfer the infection, which is a horrific idea, but also like it's a terrific detail for a film like this. And it's details like that that give the film the feeling of sprawl that you're absolutely right, that it doesn't really have in Korea, because they spend all of their time on an American army base before going to Israel.
How many more lines like that would it require to make it a 4-star? I need maybe 5 or 6 more instances
yeah.
of lines like that.
And you can do too many, can't you? You can. You can spoil the mystery by doing too many or making it a bit, you know, silly.
You could, but at the same time, that is one really juicy, juicy little nugget. And you just want, come on, I need a few more of them.
Yeah.
It made me think the whole notion of film criticism is absolutely pointless, because if you don't like a film, it just means you've watched it at the wrong time.
World War Z is a fast zombie flick.
Well, you said before 28 Days Later was the first one. I didn't know that. I'd always just assumed that fast and slow zombies were a choice, but that's not the case then.
No, they were always slow. The zombie genre was this invented by, I mean, cinematically was Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And it was this kind of shuffling dead bodies rising out of the ground. And then if they bit you, you became one of them. And they feasted on brains and they went...
Love that they love brains specifically.
They love brains, yeah. And they loved eating guts. There's a great bit innards. They're flesh eaters too.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of that, yeah. And you start to lose that in the... In your fast zombie flicks like 28 Days Later and then this one,
yeah,
World War Z, they're more just about biting and spreading a contagion.
Yeah, they don't want to eat you. Well, they do eat in 28 Days Later, though, don't they? They do eat. They feast.
They do. Yeah. No, I take that back. But it's initially about the biting,
yeah,
and the rage. And they're quick. I think there was always this lot of chat about they'd go, is 28 Days Later technically a zombie film or is it a virus film?
Right.
You know, and yes. It was very recently where Danny Boyle said, well, come on, it's obviously a zombie film.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The zombie snobs would say they're not, they don't count.
The snobs?
The snobs, because a zombie is technically a decaying dead body.
Yeah.
And the reason they move so slowly is because... They're a reanimated corpse and they don't have any muscle function.
Their tendons are fucked.
There is something there's scary about that something is shuffling slowly towards you, you know, and that's where there's real terror to those original zombie films. Whereas you watch the new ones and even like a film like Wreck, which I love and scared the shit out of me, it's a completely different kind of horror.
It is, for sure. But I know if I were to choose one to happen in real life to me, I would choose the slow zombies. Did you watch The Walking Dead, the TV series?
I started watching it. It got really boring. I'd read the comics and the TV show was just like a sort of slow soap opera just with zombies.
Sure.
So yeah. I kind of tapped out.
I think it is a soap opera with zombies. And one of the funny things about it is that as the seasons go on, the threat of the zombies or how much threat the zombies provide is kind of up and down on a dial depending on what the story needs, you know, because there'll be scenes where one character just walks through, a series of corridors with thousands of zombies in and just one by one annihilates them. And then there's another where one person is trapped in a room with four and the threat is, you know, enormous. I feel the threat is pretty consistent in World War Z, which I like about it because it's not always the case in lots of films. But it's fast zombies for me, man, in these movies. I never really felt the terror of the crush of the slow zombies. And 28 Days Later, I think, is the first film that really won me over to the genre. It's one of my favourites of all time. And I kind of rewatch it every few years, really enjoy it still. And I love the speed.
I did start rewatching it before this, and then because it was on a streaming site, an illegal one, it kept being interrupted by ads, so I had to stop.
Yeah.
But the beginning, I haven't seen it for 20 years.
Yeah.
The beginning scene where the animal rights people are busting at the monkeys.
Yeah.
The acting is horrendous.
It's bad.
It's a really shit scene.
Yeah.
It goes on far too long.
Yeah.
And generally the film looks like shit. And I know it's supposed to be like it was shot on digital, but it looks really, really shit. And I'd forgotten how shit it was. I probably will have to rewatch it, because now I'm thinking, is this a forgot you forgot? I don't know if this is any good anymore.
I mean, it would never be a forgot you forgot for me. And I think the film gets better as it goes on. But I will say that there's one shot in 28 weeks later, which I think is better than anything in the first film, with the exception perhaps of the time that you see, there's my Ocado delivery. I'll just carry on for a second. The time you see Cillian Murphy on the empty bridge in London, that's a lovely scene. But at the beginning of 28 weeks later, Robert Carlyle is hiding in a house with a few other people and his wife and his child perhaps. And the zombies attack. He's out the back and he sees through the window that his wife is banging on the glass and asking for help, and he just turns and runs. The coward Carlyle. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful scene. But as he turns and runs, he runs across this field, and from a perpendicular direction, a bunch of zombies run down this hill towards him in a meadow. And there's this wonderful kind of choreography of swerving runs. The pace that it's happening at is terrifying. The distance to the characters that the camera is gives it this huge epic scale. The music is thundering at this moment. And
it's another
fast
Godspeed
zombies,
track.
Man. It's a Godspeed track. The zombies, the fast zombies, are thrilling. I love that. I get fucking energy from watching that. If it was slow, it's a whole different thing. So in a sense, I kind of understand the people that say, you know, is this really a zombie thing? I agree with Danny Boyle. Hey, it is, but it's a whole different kettle of zomfish. You know what I mean?
It's a fucking great opening to a film. I haven't rewatched that in a while, and I'm going to bang it on.
Well, they announced 28 years later the other day, didn't they?
Not just that, there's a whole... You don't just announce one film these days.
Do you announce more than one?
You announce a trilogy.
Was it 28 years later, 28 decades later? 28 centuries later.
Don't know what the other two will be.
28
Someone
millennia
else is making just the same joke that you made.
Oh.
So don't think you're special.
I didn't think I was special. I just thought I was quick, you know?
You are quick. You banged it right out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first one will be 28 years later.
Uh-huh.
It's going to star Jodie Comer, fantastic actor.
Don't know who that is.
Okay, well,
Let me look.
I'm not going to tell you who she is. You should know.
Jodie Comer.
Comer.
Comer. Comer?
I mean, you come, don't you? Come? C-O-M-E-R?
Yeah, but when you add an R at the end of it, does it not become coma?
There's no B in there.
Well, I didn't say comba.
Coma.
Hmm. Do you think it's Comer? Jodie Comer? Don't know. Could it be? Hard to say.
I mean, just because you didn't know who she was, you're now just trying to pick me up on how I say her name. I know who she is and I've seen her in stuff.
Yeah. I think I know who she is. I think I've seen her in stuff as well, but, you know.
So, just Garland, just most importantly, my Lord Garland.
Yeah.
He'll write them. He'll write the trilogy.
Garland's writing them.
Of course he is.
I was just teasing.
He's the guy, mate. He did it.
He wrote it. Yeah, I'm just trying to get you hot under the collar, you know.
Danny Boyle, D. Boyle will direct the first one.
For real? They're back together again?
They're back together again.
Is it their first coming back together?
No, because they did... Sunshine.
Yeah, but they said they wouldn't... He said he wouldn't work with him after Sunshine, didn't he?
He didn't say wouldn't. He sort of said they'd had different... temperaments, but he was so like they really fit and gelled on the zombie thing. He talked about viscerality and the viscerality of Danny Boyle. It will fit anyway.
Oh, wow.
they've grown up. This is
yeah,
this
they've
is
grown 28 up.
Years later, mate. 28
the viscerality
years later
of Danny Boyle.
Someone else is going to direct the second, and the chat is that Cillian will possibly return for that one in a small role, and then the third one will be pure Cillian. This is all scuttlebutt. This is all rumour and hearsay. Anyone who reads the trades, who's listening to this,
yeah,
this is old news, and I'm sorry I'm sharing old news.
Right. I don't think anyone's listening to this is reading the trades. I think the people listening to this are lucky if they can read, you know?
Oh, mate, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, get them. Get them.
We haven't touched on Bradley Pitt.
I want to touch on Bradley Pitt so much. I want to touch all over Bradley Pitt.
He's a conundrum. I'm going to let you take the lead on this because I had a little glance at his filmography. It's a puzzler. It's a puzzler. I don't know whether he knows what the fuck he's doing. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I do want to go through his filmography. It's tricky because he's in many, 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 many things.
Skip over. You know what to do. Skip over shit.
I know how to do it, but I'm going to start with his uncredited role in Boy at the Beach in the film Hunk. No, I'm not doing that. Although he was in an episode of 21 Jump Street in 1988. That feels vital. But no, of course, as we all know, I think, the first real Bradley Pitt is Thelma and Louise, right? Or am I missing something?
No, that's exactly right.
That's first Bradley. That's where Bradley first graces our screens and gives people, sort of gets people aroused all around the world.
He's the kind of sex figure in that feminist classic.
Yeah.
It's not about objectifying the ladies, no. It's about objectifying the man.
Yeah. He's like the guy in the Coke advert. You remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Is it was it Diet Coke, that advert?
Or? It was, yeah, he's the Diet Coke guy.
He's the Diet Coke guy.
Yeah, and he's doing it cinematically.
Well, he's very exciting in that film, and that's 1991. So that's where we're first coming upon Thelma and Louise. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's 2 years until I see another film that I recognise, which is True Romance in 1993. And again, he's very much seasoning there. As Dick's roommate, right?
He's great in that.
Yeah.
He's a great stoner.
He's a very good stoner. Suddenly, 2 years later, there's a jump to rather a feature role in Interview with the Vampire, where he stars opposite Tom Cruise. And it feels very much like it's come out of nowhere, and that's why I'm assuming that some of these things in between must have been films that would have won him favour in one way or another, because I don't understand how you make that jump, unless it's just because he's sexy and young and they're giving him a try.
No, because he's in A River Runs Through It.
A River Runs Through It. Yes, he is, in 1992, and I don't know what that is, and I've never seen it.
It's basically like Legends of the Fall,
oh,
but about fly fishing.
Oh, okay.
As soon as you see him with his top off,
yeah,
shagging Gina Davis, you're like, this guy's a movie star.
There's never a question in my mind.
Not just for us, but like people in the biz.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that
Not just for us. He's not like the true definition of a movie star. He's not just for us. He's for everyone. Yeah.
No, it's more like you're sort of like, how did he get to Legends of the Fall? It's because, you know, he's been in a couple of other things that weren't necessarily massive.
Sure.
And then there's a big jump up.
Yeah.
I think he's obviously, you know, floating around. He's super sexy.
Yeah.
He's being primed for this shit.
Oh, he's been grown in a lab for it. And let me tell you, fine, we've got A River Runs Through It, same year as, well, year just year before True Romance as the stoner. Bang, Interview with the Vampire opposite Tom Cruise. Everybody loves it. Bang, Legends of the Fall. Now, watch this run, okay? Hear this run. 7, 1995. Also in 1995, 12 Monkeys. Two films that I know you love. And he's in both of them in the same year, okay? That's just the start of the run, Adam.
Yeah, this run ends really quickly.
It does,
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's just there's a lot of good films in a short space of time. Not all of them are kit keepers, you know, but
that's a really good joke. I thought for a minute, it's like, is he going to say Sleepers as part of the run?
Sleepers.
Is he going to say The Devil's Own is part of the run?
Hey, remember, you ever see the film 7 years
in Tibet? Is he
going to
say Meet Joe Black is part of this run?
But listen, Meet Joe Black's very popular on TikTok. I don't know if you've ever spoken to anyone under the age of 16, but they love Meet Joe Black. At least they love the scenes they've seen on TikTok.
I think I'm starting to get a sense of him.
Uh-huh.
He does one or two bangers,
yeah,
and then he does a longer run, what I would call a run, of middling to duff nothings.
Sure.
So go on, tell me.
Well, now we're back to bang, okay? We've got arguably double bang, and then we've got a little bit of rough. Now it's 1999, and you know what
Time
I'm going to say,
bang.
Don't you? It's a triple bang? You think it's a triple bang? A, The Fight Club, 1999. Not The Fight Club. Don't know why I said A. That was a weird way of saying it. But he's in Fight Club in 1999.
A, The Fight Club.
B, The Snatch, 2000. He plays Mickey O'Neill. And then C, The Mexican, 2001. Is that a hit? I don't know if that's a hit. That's not a hit.
It's not a hit. It was derided at the time.
Plays another Jerry in that one as well, by
it's
the way.
It's much, much, much maligned. Jerry.
He's Jerry with a J in The Mexican.
I think The Mexican is much maligned.
Sure.
And we should do it. We should do it. It's on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've seen it. But if I have, I've forgotten everything about it.
I think when people watched it, they thought it was going to be, because it starred Pitt and Julia Roberts, they thought it was going to be something else, like this big, sexy, romantic film.
Yeah.
And it's basically an indie movie starring two Hollywood stars.
Right.
That's my takeaway.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, then we go to Spy Game in 2001.
Plum, forgot you forgot.
Yeah, big time Plum, yeah. There's a very famous cameo in Friends he gets to make in 2001, which I suppose signifies that he alongside Bruce Willis, he's made it, right? He's in Friends. He's being cheered by the audience. He's cinema, America's hero.
Talking about cinema with cinema.
Well,
stop talking about Friends.
Well, back to Suave Pitt in Ocean's 11. 2001, Rusty Ryan. There he is. One of the group, isn't he? He's one of the gang. He's one of the two main of the gang, right? He's top billing in that with Clooney, right? There's no arguing about that.
He does nothing in those films.
No, but he's top billing.
He's second billing, yeah.
But is he second billing or is he joint top billing with Clooney in 2001?
He's second.
He's second to Clooney.
Yeah.
But now he's top, right?
No.
Has he ever eclipsed Clooney?
Sorry, it's not called Rusty Ryan's 11.
Sure.
It's called Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
And who plays Danny Ocean?
I know, it's George Clooney. Yeah, but fine. But,
so
but,
who's
like,
top billing?
No, okay, fine. That's not how it always works. It doesn't always work like that.
Joe. Of course it is.
No.
I'm not watching.
Desperately trying to think of a film that has the name of a character that isn't the main
character. Yeah, I bet
character.
You are. I bet you are trying to win this fucking nothing of an argument. Move on.
People will think of them. People will think of a film where the title is the titular character isn't the lead. Now, listen. Has Clooney been eclipsed by Pitt? Is he not eclipsed now? Is Pitt not eclipsing Clooney now? Clooney's no longer. Pitt's bigger than Clooney today, right?
No. There was a time when he was. Now they're both, I would say, borderline nothings.
Let me do a Twitter poll while we're doing this podcast.
No, right? Okay, no, wait.
Hold on. I need you to help me define the language that I'm doing this with, right? And at the end of the podcast, we'll come back and we'll see who is it. Is it who's bigger? What are we saying?
Can I just interject? Okay, Pitt is going to. The fact that he's Tarantino's boy now, is going to fuck with the curve.
Well, it's not going to fuck. I mean, it just is a thing now.
It's not, because if you either look at the entirety of the man's work, film by film.
I'm talking about now.
Okay, great. Talk about now then.
You're just afraid of the results of the Twitter poll.
No. If you say now, obviously we're going to say Pitt, because Pitt most recently was in a more big, critically acclaimed film, which is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Clooney is in coffee adverts, so
okay.
You know you've stacked the deck in your favour.
No, listen, I am not stacking the deck in my favour. I said to you, surely Brad Pitt is bigger than Clooney now, and you said no, he's
not.
It was the threat of a Twitter poll that made you start to backtrack. Now my language here is settle an argument. Who's bigger? Brad Pitt, George Clooney.
It's not an argument.
So you don't want me to do this. You don't want me to tweet.
No, because
it.
It's right. Not. You don't frame it as settling an argument, because you're right.
Okay, so I'm just saying who's bigger. It's bigger, right? Because what we're saying is bigger.
Who's bigger now?
Uh-huh.
Brad Pitt or George Clooney?
Yeah.
Who, over the span of their acting career?
Pat? You want a second poll?
No, because that's it. Not because otherwise the answer's obvious. The answer to the first one's too obvious.
Sure.
I'm just like adding a little. Who has more great films? There you go.
Who's been in more better films? Right. Yeah, you're trying to get the question asked that will come back with Clooney. I've posted it. I've posted exactly what you said. It's already posted now. It's already posted, but I really admire the lengths you went to get a poll that would come back with Clooney as the winner so that you could in some way feel like a winner.
No, because I don't even know the answer to that.
I think it must be Clooney, right? It must
be. Well, no, let's fucking...
Didn't we? We went through Clooney on a recent episode of this podcast, and it was hot. It was stacked, wasn't it?
Look, Joe, hold your fist out, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah, it's out.
And I'm going to name the films where Pitt leads or is co-leads, uh-huh. and they're great, okay? Or yeah. they're really good. Uh-huh. All right, so... Seven. You're counting, yeah?
I'm counting,
Seven.
Yeah.
12 Monkeys. Mm-hmm. Fight Club.
Yep.
Snatch.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give him Snatch.
I think that's fine. He steals the show, so it's okay.
Let's say Ocean's 11, but I don't believe
well,
it.
Well, it's a duff one anyway because they're both in it, so it doesn't count.
Okay. Assassination of Jesse James.
Sure.
I'm going to give him Burn After Reading because he's amazing in it.
Oh, it's a terrible film.
It is. Okay. Well, I don't count it then.
I think you could take Inglorious Bastards, though.
I'm going to give Inglorious Bastards. I'm saying it. Inglorious Bastards. Moneyball.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
World War Z. Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, fine.
12 Years a Slave.
He's not in that enough.
Okay.
Doesn't count. He's in it for 5 minutes. You didn't like Fury, did you?
No, but I'm going to give him Fury.
All right, fine.
Is he in Big Short enough?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, he's fucking amazing in that film.
And Ad Astra. Okay, how many is that?
Ad Astra, I don't know. I don't know if I would give him Ad Astra.
I'm giving him Ad Astra.
You're giving it to him. It's 12.
Okay, great. Now, here we go.
We're doing Clooney now?
This is it. We've come, you've said we've counted 12.
Uh-huh.
And now we're going to go through... I love this. This is, none of this is appearing.
No, let's do it. This is staying, man.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. This is absolutely staying. Hold on. I'm just getting Clooney up as well so I can follow along.
Also, I love the fact, if you don't agree with the film I've said, yeah. don't count it and tell me.
Okay, fine. Okay. I'll count. We'll argue about them and we'll count some of them and we won't count others. Now go.
Okay. Dusk Till Dawn.
We're doing Clooney now. Dusk Till Dawn. Okay, yeah.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
What year was that? Just so I can catch up with you.
We're going back to 1996.
1996. Okay, yeah, there we go.
Out of Sight.
Uh-huh.
Three Kings.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. I know everyone loves that film. You can get me on that, by the way. Oh, Brother, you really should at some point, because I can't remember anything about that film. I really didn't like it when I watched it one time, but it comes up in conversation so regularly that I feel like I need to watch it again anyway, so I might as well do it for this.
Solaris.
Sure.
I can't remember a thing about Syriana. I feel like it's a good film. Michael Clayton?
Yeah, you can definitely have Michael Clayton.
Up in the Air?
Okay.
Can we have Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Yeah, I'll give you that. I like that film.
The American?
Yeah, we did that on this podcast. We enjoyed it.
The Descendants?
Yep, that's going to be on this podcast at some point for sure.
Gravity? Not in enough, is he?
I think that's okay. Sandra Bullock's vehicle, man.
Yeah, let's push back. I love that pushback. Yeah. It's good. I don't think he's going to make it. He's not making it.
He's fantastic in Hail Caesar, and he is in that film enough to add that to the
list. Hail Caesar. Sure.
It's an ensemble, but he's brilliant in it.
That's 10.
He hasn't made it, mate. It's 11.
He hasn't made it.
That was 11, but he hasn't made it.
Was it 11? He hasn't made it.
Well, an early indications show, for example, let me tell you. let me bloody tell you.
Tell me. Listen, I need some cream for this humble pie that I'm
about to eat. A lot of people have replied. Easy, it's Pitt. Brad Pitt could do Danny Ocean, but George Clooney can't do Billy Bean. I think, that's really interesting. That, by the way, is from someone called Return on Twitter.
I think he's right.
I think that's a great insight. Really good insight.
I think fuck that guy, but also fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
He's fucking nailed it.
Nicholas says, this feels like a very one-sided question. What's the punchline? But hasn't actually said which one it is. Brad, comfortably, how is this even a debate? It's Brad Pitt. Next question should be, which one of them was better in the Oceans trilogy? Here's an interesting one from Triff. It's about taste, but I think Clooney's best films aren't as good or as regarded by the majority as second tier Brad Pitt films, which is interesting because that's about Clooney film choice rather than like, you know,
Best of Clooney's aren't even as good as.
No, he's saying they're not. He's saying by the majority of people they're not considered in the same way, or they are smaller films that perhaps people haven't seen. Yeah, which I think is fair enough.
That makes Clooney more interesting, and that's why I'm a Clooney kind of guy.
There's 54 minutes left on this poll. It's only been 6 minutes. There are 367 votes so far. Would you care to guess how much of the vote Brad Pitt has?
I'd say like probably 100%.
It's 87%. It's 87%. But it was tight. We showed that it was tight. Having said that, while we showed it was tight, I did feel like that there were more on the Clooney list that were a little, you know, we can help them onto the list. They're a little weaker than the ones that made it onto the Pitt list. And I wonder if we went back through Pitt, which we won't do now because we're just going back and forth, whether we'd find other films on Pitt's list that we would add that represent the same kind of level of strength as some of the Clooney editions.
No. The films I read out were the films that should have been added to both.
Sure.
I like maybe Fury, we could knock off Fury.
We could have knocked off Fury.
I'm still, you know, I think, you know, let's... Pitt edges it.
Yeah.
He's bigger than him now.
Edges.
So, you know, I think Clooney... I think, here we go. This is where I'm going to win the fucking argument. Pitt's shit films are shitter, generally shitter. And he seems to make, like, Clooney's made fewer films than Pitt. Mm-hmm. And Pitt doesn't seem to know what he's doing. And Clooney does actually seem to know what he's doing. But I would only put that down to the fact that Clooney was in Batman and Robin. And he was so, that was such a stinker for him. It probably gave him a little bit more, it made him a little more prudish.
Yeah.
Prudish, sorry, it made him a little bit more prudent.
Sure.
But you go back into Pitt's list and we're going to start to read out, he's in some absolute drivel for ages. Am I wrong?
On Pitt, we left off Oceans, 2001. God, it's over 20 years ago where we left off, right? Here Comes the Run. And to be honest, man, in order to give you the run, I'm going to have to read all the films now for a little bit, okay?
So are we going from Ocean's 11?
Yes, that's where we're going from. Are you have I lost you? Are you confused?
No.
I can't skip over the bad films if the point here is to emphasize the run, yeah? If I'm picking up where you just left off,
a lot of these films I just know
films.
That you haven't seen.
Yeah, Full Frontal.
That's a Soderbergh thing. Who knows how much he was in that or not?
Sure. Let's try this with like a one-word answer from you. Yeah? Ready? Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
I don't remember him being in that film. And that was directed by George Clooney.
Oh, that was so many words. But I think it was useful. It was important, wasn't it? Then we've got Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas.
Yeah. Animated stinker.
Yeah, there's a King of the Hill episode in there too. Troy.
Well, we all know that that's absolute shit.
Very watchable, though. Then we got Ocean's 12 in 2004. Bang into shit. A real slosh bucket with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is probably
horrible.
One of the worst films I've ever seen. It really is bad. And I don't feel bad saying it. Babel in 2006. Babel.
Rubbish.
It was fine.
Self-indulgent nonsense.
2007, Ocean's 13. Mm-hmm.
So just count that number of films. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oceans, that's 5.
Yeah.
Two of them are part of a franchise.
Yeah. It was quite a bad run in there. I mean, Babel wasn't that bad. I think it was fine. It was
the kind of film that
choice.
Leonardo DiCaprio would choose to do now.
It's the kind of film that George Clooney would choose to do.
Then we've got
more of an interesting short run. I think this is where we enter a new era. 2007.
This is where he writes the ship.
Yeah, because we
for a bit
because we first see him in the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which I know that you really really like. Having said that,
whatever you think of the film, he's great. He's really good in the film.
He is good in that film. Yeah, and it's a slightly different face of Pitt, isn't it? Have we seen that Pitt in recent years? We haven't. You know.
No.
Okay.
That's where he starts to be really interesting as an actor
yep.
again
yep.
after A long old slog.
Agree. Then he's the most interesting thing about Burn After Reading, which I don't think is a great film, but he's terrific in it, and he's very funny in that. Then we've got a bit of a, you know, we hit Duff again with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Duff, Duff, Duff. I mean, up the Duff.
Yeah, it's bad. It's big Duff. Then 2009, another interesting choice. It's Inglourious Basterds, and I think that's the first time that we see Daddy Pitt. Do you know what I mean by that? We saw glimpses of it in Jesse James, but Inglourious Basterds is the first, like, Deep South spitting and chewing tobacco Daddy Pitt. And I see a lot of Daddy Pitt after this.
No, that's it all comes from Assassination of Jesse James. Everything, like, that's Inglourious Basterds is just then the turned up to 11 parody of that, of like, oh, I did it. I can now have fun with it.
That's what I mean.
And then he has fun with it after.
And then he does the specific Inglourious Basterds performance in several films that come after, I would say. Anyway, beyond that, The Tree of Life, Moneyball, which is, you know, fucking brilliant film. Love that movie. There's so many of them in here, Adam. Then we've got World War Z. He's a small part in 12 Years a Slave. We've got Fury, The Big Short. He's brilliant in that.
You missed him killing them softly. He's really good in that.
Anyway, then he's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I think might be his best performance.
He's also then after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's in The Lost City, and he's in Bullet Train, and he's in Babylon. Three stinky shitters.
And he hasn't been in anything for 2 years.
Yeah, and the next film he's going to be in will be directed by, oh no, he's going to co-star with George Clooney. That's the next film he's in.
In what?
It's called Wolfs.
Oh, what the hell's Wolfs? It follows two lone wolf fixers who were assigned to the same job. Oh. That's exciting. They're two sides of the same apple, aren't they?
They're very handsome men. I find it very interesting. And the fact that everyone just insta-pits makes me really want to double down and
of course it does.
Hunker down and defend Daddy Clooney. And I need to examine that. And I know that I'm wrong and everyone else is right. But it's like the film like The American, I think, rewatching it as part of this podcast made me think, oh, that's a really, really good film. And I think everyone just assumes and associates Clooney with he's a bit soft, he's a bit wet, and he's in coffee adverts. And I think they're forgetting the amazing stuff he's been in. He's fucking fantastic in Dusk Till Dawn.
I mean, it's on the formal record of the Movies You Forgot podcast. I think we dedicated 40 minutes of the American episode to talking about how excellent his filmography was, and specifically his choice of films. You know, what we've revealed here is that Pitt is more of a kind of, Pitt's pissing all over the place. He hasn't lifted the toilet seat up, right? Half the time, his stream is straight down the middle, and that splosh that you're hearing is so loud it can be heard three rooms away, right? But he's still spraying on the seat.
You really, really fucking nailed it. Oh, man.
Whereas Clooney sits down to wee.
Joe Devine.
He sits down to wee. You can't hear a fucking thing. He sits down to wee.
Yeah, and that's why I love him, because I sit down to wee.
And I stand up. I'm more of a Pitt guy. You're more of a Clooney. I like them both, really. You know, we both like everyone. It's all fine.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
Should we do the box office game, Joe?
I would like to play the box office game, although I am more trepidatious than normal weeks, I will admit that.
Tell me why, though, because, Joe. Why are you trepidatious?
Because I've spent the last 45 weeks making fun of you and applying a 10% rule, which I think is very great and fun, but some would say is a little harsh, and I'm about to feel the full force of that pressing against my sternum.
Yeah, no, because you're on the other side of it, aren't you? You're playing the box office
game. That's right. Do you know how in golf, though, you play with a handicap? I think you're a sort of film expert, aren't you? And I'm not really. So what if I got a 20% one instead of 10%? Would that be fair?
Yeah, as long as you do the maths, I'm not going to figure it out.
Oh, I'll do the maths. I'll be doing the maths. Don't worry. Don't worry.
I'm going to try and do this in the way that Joe does.
Please do.
And let's do the box office game for the film World War Z, directed by Mark Forster, starring Bradley Pitts. And we are going to begin with your guess for the budget estimated. Uh-huh. Brackets
estimated, yeah.
Brackets. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of info on
this. I need
this.
This is important information that I need.
I buried that info earlier on in the chat, but this film had significant reshoots.
Yeah, my ears pricked up when you started to say that, and I changed the answer that I had in my head because of that.
I was giving you a steer. The film obviously already cost money. Yeah. Incidentally, I did want to say, I don't think the CGI human zombie bodies haven't really aged well.
not
have they? They don't really feel like there's any. They don't have any gravity to them.
They don't, but they don't. They don't ruin the film. It's not so bad that I think that I didn't stop at any point and say, "Gosh, that's bad." It was fine as a representation. It was fine. It didn't ruin my enjoyment of the film.
It works when you're almost like really far, far away. But when they kind of do those mid-shot scenes and you've got kind of people leaping across, you know, it's a CGI thing.
It's another reason why the final scene set in Wales, that more traditional zombie movie part of it, is great, because the actors playing the zombies are just actors in makeup and they do lovely clicking and moving, and it feels really real. Yeah, exactly.
You've heard, and also you know what the budgets have been for other films of this.
I can't really remember them, but yeah, sure. Here's my process, okay? You said, Joe, you're playing the box office game. First thing, I said, fuck. Second thing, I thought really long and hard about looking and then being dead accurate, but I thought you'd be upset about that and it would spoil the fun, so I didn't do it, okay? Thing three, I started low because I thought it's a zombie film. Who spends money on a zombie film? People don't do that, right? It's a zombie film. It's niche as a result of that. And then I started watching it and I was like, fuck, this is a blockbuster, man. This isn't a zombie film. This is a blockbuster. Look at the sprawl. Feel the sprawl, yeah? So then I thought, I went from like, I thought, oh, 15, yeah? And then I went, sprawl, shit. I was like, 25, fuck, okay, 25. Maybe that. And then I watched it more, and then they went to Israel, and I was like, oh, good Lord. Is it 25? It can't be 25. It's got to be more than that, hasn't it? I moved up to 35. And then you talked about the reshoots, and I thought, good God, maybe it's 40. And then most recently, I thought, listen, what's a big round number? You've said on previous episodes that they'll be spending around 100 for a sort of thing, yeah? So I thought, maybe in that same manner, they'd say, hey, let's spend 50 on this. And so that's how I've come to the conclusion that they spent £40 million, because also I always overestimate, so I'm saying 40. Dollars, and I'm talking in dollars, of course.
Yeah, of course you are. I can't help but laugh.
Yeah.
Like,
I've got an £8 million range, $8 million range here for my 20%. Am I really far off?
You're so far off. I find, like, you start, why, the fact that you're, the idea that you're watching a blockbuster and you've started on 15
million. No, because that was before I realised I was watching a blockbuster.
Okay.
And then I moved it up to 25 million because nothing really happened in the film until they got to Israel. And I was like, shit, this is huge. It can't be.
Right. But how's that even got you? That's only got you to 40
because
million.
Because I don't know what I'm
basically,
doing.
Right. If remember, you again, seeded within your answer was a clue to where to begin. Yep. You said, I say these films start at 100 million. Okay? That's your beginning point. Okay? And even if you start at 100 million, you're nowhere close.
Really?
Okay? You start at 100 million and then you start factoring in reshoots.
How much was this?
This film, brackets estimated, cost $190 million.
What? That's so much money. That's way too much money.
Way too much money. But given that they scrapped the entirety of the third act and reshot.
Yeah. Mate, I could have made this for $40 million.
Now, maybe. I don't think he could.
Man. I'm so far away. I'm 500% away.
Did you not like the CGI, man? This film is pissing money, CGI-wise.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
You feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling fine. You know, how are you feeling?
I feel like everything I thought about the next two answers has to change imminently.
Yeah, swiftly. So we've got opening weekend, US and Canada. Do you want to know when it came out?
I really want to know.
21st of June, 2013.
Mm. It's because it's a summer blockbuster, Adam.
It's a blockbuster film. This cost mucho dinero. So what do you think it made opening US and Canada?
I mean, it's got Bradley Pitt in it. And I imagine the trailer being very exciting for this sort of film. It's 2013. It's off the back of a bunch of, you know, of zombie craze. It's their biggest go at a movie like this, right? So I think it's done well. But it's also not great. It's not a brilliant film.
But what do you think done well is? What do you think done well is?
Like, this is the bit. This is like my logic is terrific, but then equals pants, you know?
Yeah. equals three buckets of popcorn.
Yeah, equals a trick. Yeah. Okay, done well. This movie, I'm going to say opening weekend, I think it did $35 million in the opening weekend.
$35 million. Better than your last guess.
Uh-huh.
It actually made a not too shabby $66.4 million.
Wow.
Which
that's
is...
That's Logan territory for this film.
Logan,
I thought this was kind of slept on, this film.
Logan did not cost $190 million to make.
My God, does this film make money? I guess if it did $66 million in the opening weekend, it's definitely going over the budget, but I don't know about the marketing. Good God.
I remember this film being broadly well received.
I do not remember that. I remember it being slept on.
I think people thought it was going to be a stinker. There was a lot of chat about the reshoots. There was a lot of... The notion was that it was going to be a stinker. And in the same way that Rise of surprised...
Yeah.
Everyone turned
Rise
up
of the
and
surprise
went,
of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Everyone went, oh. I think everyone walked away from World War Z and thought that was a really entertaining film. I'm glad I saw it.
I remember everyone talking, the chat about the reshoots. Everyone in my circle was chatting about the reshoots. They were, man. Everyone, my family. I remember talking to my grandmother about the reshoots.
Listen, just because you're losing the box office game, stop. What did it make? Gross worldwide.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot for the stars now. I'm shooting for the stars.
Gross worldwide. You think it's slept on?
$500 million.
Here he goes. He's getting back into respectability.
And I think that's based off opening weekend and us saying that it was broadly well received, right? I think the maths adds up. If it's 66 in the opening weekend, I think it's doing 500.
You are... Maybe you're within 10% here. It made 540 mil.
I'm within 10%.
He's done it. By Jove, mate. I think he's got it. You really shit the bed on that fucking budget, mate. You really shit the bed on the budget.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. It's time for the game, isn't it?
It is time for the game.
It's time for the game where this is the part of the podcast where one of us reads out a list of movies they think the other one's forgot. They forgot. And this time it's my week. The new game is we read out five, and if I don't get him out on one of these five, we will revert to
the communal list.
A mother list.
Yeah. The mother list.
The mother list. I still don't think that there's any clarity on what the mother list is. And I feel
the mother list is a combination of films that you and I agree are canon plum, even if we specifically haven't forgotten them, and or a great canon plum suggestions from our listeners.
Yeah, but where do they sit? And who, if I'm listening to this as a person, I'm like, well, what is this list? Where is it? How can I access it?
But they can't access it. They can email us the movies. What happens is we go through the list that we've agreed together, the communal list, and we go through until we've selected one that we want to do. And then we don't give them away.
What?
Otherwise there's no stakes in it, you know?
Okay.
The reason you're confused is because we haven't agreed the communal list yet.
Exactly.
And if we get to it today, we'll have to take a pause and then write the communal list together and then pretend that there wasn't a pause through the magic of editing.
Okay.
But that's why you're confused. Don't worry about it. I've got you. I'm looking after you.
Okay, fine. Okay.
You're in Daddy's warm, soft arms.
Here we go. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Here's the list.
Uh-huh.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh,
the sound of plum.
It's a little plummy. It's mild plummy.
He has to veto. He has to veto.
I'm not vetoing. I would quite like to do that one, but you can have plum, but I want to hear the rest of your list.
Oh, okay.
I want to hear the rest of your list just in case there's a deeper plum.
Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
No. You tried to get that one before, didn't you? And then... Oh, wait, no, is that the Matthew McConaughey one?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so deep plum.
That's the plummiest of plum.
That's so plummy. No, that's with... also with...
Emma Stone.
Is it Emma Stone?
She pops up in a really fantastic... It's like she's one of the ghosts. But it's...
the one I'm thinking of, though?
Is it Jennifer Garner? Is she the...
No. It is Jennifer Garner, isn't it? Isn't the blonde woman also in that, though? The blonde woman, you know.
The
one who's in Almost Famous. Isn't she in that? Or is that a different rom-com I'm thinking of with McConaughey?
Are you sure you've seen Ghost? This is...
I'm pretty sure I've seen... Let me just double check.
We'd be able to do the full pre-McConaissance...
Yeah, I have seen Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. I have seen it. It's deep plum, man. Well, okay, give me more on this list, though, because we're definitely doing one of these.
27 Dresses.
I've never seen that. It's good. See, we can clear that off the list.
Clean that off. That's a good little flick, that. The Accountant.
With Ben Affleck.
B. Affleck.
The only thing I have to say about The Accountant, I've already said on a previous podcast episode, which is that every film tries to make itself better by using that very specific Radiohead song. What's the song called? Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding. Everything in its right place.
Everything in its right place. And I mean, The Accountant uses that in the fucking trailer and is a bad film. So I refuse to watch that one. I will veto it all the way. There's plenty of Ben Affleck's forgots out there. So,
well, get me on them. Dunkirk.
I mean, it's a fine affair, isn't it? It really is. It's fine feta. I would love to do Dunkirk on this podcast. Tell you what, keep that one in your back pocket. Hit me with it again, because it would get me. I've never rewatched it since you and I watched it in the IMAX together, and I nearly had a panic attack. So I'd love to give that another go. But it's not anywhere near as deep plum as the first two.
Now, the problem with the new game, I love the new version of the new game, but the notion that you get to pick now, that does make my blood boil.
I'm not going to pick. I'm going to let you pick, but I'm going to give you some information before you pick, okay?
Yeah.
Ghosts of Girlfriends Past is a deeper plum. It's a deeper plum.
It's okay? A shorter film. It's a deeper plum.
It's a shorter film. It's a deeper plum. I would like to watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon again. I have not watched that for a long time.
Me too.
However,
mm.
my sense is that the deeper plum might be a little juicier. But I leave the choice in your hands.
Does it mean I can never give you Crouching Tiger again?
No, it doesn't. You can save that. You can store that up. It's a plum, man. You get to use that. It's free of charge plum. You get to use them whenever you want.
I feel like Ghosts would be a real nice change of pace for this podcast.
It would. We've done a lot of epic heaviness recently.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Ghosts of Girlfriends Past will be our 47th film. And it's our first light-hearted rom-com. So it's very appropriate, I think, that we're finally setting out the deck chair on the decking of rom-com under the sun of McConaughey and Stone and Garner, The Clouds of Garner.
Push back on comedies because Blades of Glory was... And Paul, Never to be Released.
Never to be Released, Paul.
Little bit of deep info, secret info, guys. We've recorded an episode on Paul, the Nick Frost, Simon Pegg starrer.
It was the inaugural episode.
And it just, you know, wasn't good, was it? That's back when Joe was the host. But now I'm the host, and I am now going to end this episode. That was the... World War Z.
That rhymes,
you see. That's why I said Z now.
That's why you said it.
The World War Z episode.
That's the one.
Thanks for listening. Joe, say bye.
There were two other films we didn't release, actually. Do you remember what they were? Just before we say goodbye. Of all the episodes we've done, there are three in total that we've killed. Paul was one of them.
Road to Perdition.
Yeah, it was episodes 1 and 3 we killed. Road to Perdition was the third one. And then there was another one, which was, it was episode 19B.
What was that one?
It was Philomena.
Oh, that was because that was in person, and I got really drunk, and I was just shouting at you.
You were shouting about the Catholic Church, I think.
Come on, don't pretend why it was. It wasn't because of that. That gave everyone the bonus. We got the bonus... Anger management episode.
Yeah, that's the holiday we got that out of.
It was supposed to be a nice clean Philomena, and it turned out
it was a dirty anger management.
I just really resented you coming for Coogan, and I wasn't up for it, and I'd had too much to drink.
Yeah, you're a real Coogan stan. It's you in your corner with Coogan, Garland, and Sir Christopher.
Don't use that word on me. Don't say what? Stan. Fuck me, man. You're not a fucking Gen Z or whatever. Stan.
Gen Z. Listen, I'm part of the online community, you know. So.
I fucking hate that word.
Why?
It's absolutely pathetic. People, I'm such a stan. No, you're not. Okay, and it's but people use it as a, like, they try and own it, and then people use it as a term of like you just tried to use on me to, like, belittle people.
Yeah. No, I was trying to belittle you.
So in both instances, it's fucked.
What should I say instead? How do I describe your relationship with Coogan, Garland?
How about the word fan?
Okay, a fan. Fan. But it's more than that, isn't it?
It's not.
I think it's more than that because the extents that you go to defend them, is that what a fan does? I guess so. A super fan?
It's the way.
I'd feel better if I could say super fan.
Okay, I prefer that. But like, it's the way that people, it's used as a term to just dismiss someone's opinion in its entirety. Oh, by the way, you're a Nolan stan, so anything you say about Christopher Nolan is now immaterial.
That's why I was using it, because I was trying to dismiss you.
People do that for Taylor Swift fans. They go, Swifties. It's so demeaning and dehumanising. Yeah. How dare you do that to Swifties? How dare you do that to Nolan guys? Garland guys.
Do you think there are guys? I know there's Nolan guys. There's Sir Christopher's guys. But I don't know. Is there Garland guys?
I'm a Garland guy.
I know you're a Garland, and I know people like Garland, but I don't think anyone's going around poking fun at the Garland, you know, quote, stands, because, you know, I don't think there's not enough community culture around Garland for it to exist, right? Whereas Coogan there is, maybe regionally.
Maybe. I love that regionally, little miniature car climb down there. Hey, email us movies you forgot. @gmail.com.
Yeah.
Is Garland guys a thing?
Is it?
Is it?
I don't think anyone's coming at Garland.
Are they? And also, please, you've heard the new system. You've got to try and get a movie you forgot on our list.
Please do.
Your suggestions so far, everyone, have been rubbish.
No. Some of them were impeccable.
Yeah, no, but I'm trying to, like, you know, what's the word where you try to... Reverse psychology.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. You're dismissing them with language.
And also, follow me on Letterboxd, @Error of Ways. I'm really enjoying all the interactions I have on that platform.
This is genuinely true, by the way. Adam texted me the other day, like uncharacteristically excited because someone had interacted with him on the Letterboxd. So
someone called me really a chinny fuck.
Yeah, it's really going to make his day.
It was like a callback to some whole Dangerous Method episode. He called me a chinny fuck. I was like, brilliant.
Look at you own that now. You're owning it now, huh? That's you, man. That's said with love and admiration, that chinny fuck that is.
That was Dara Nolan. Follow him on Letterboxd. Follow me on Letterboxd. Okay.
Please do. It makes his day. It makes him so happy.
Ew, enough of that business. You should see you next week for the Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Oh, I'm excited.